Stay tuned for a conversation with John Orr. Today's topic will be democracy in America. Is the system broken? We'll be looking forward to your calls.
Support for Friday Public Affairs comes in part from the Blue Scorcher Bakery Cafe, baking up community one loaf at a time. Located at 15th and Duane, Astoria, bluescorcher.coop and 503-338-7473. Open daily from 7 a.m. to 4 p.m.
Just a quick look at the weather. I can say confidently, as of this moment, the weather forecast does not call for rain. Mostly cloudy today and tomorrow. Some wind, 21 to 22. Saturday, sunny. Sunday, sunny.
Oh, yeah.
And it is time now for a conversation with John Orr. This is a show that invites the listeners of KMUN to call in, weigh in with their comments or their opinions, their questions, presented in a civil manner. If you're going to speak from authorities and sources, make them reliable to the best of your ability. You like to keep it civil. Today's topic: democracy in America, is the system broken? And while that may seem like kind of another news bummer topic, stay tuned because there are prospects not well reported in the popular media that provide hope, a basis for maybe rebuilding things that have been broken down by the progression of big money Supreme Court decisions, 5-4 decision 2010 with Citizens United, which stripped most states and federal laws of their teeth in fighting corruption and the way the big money controls things here. So give us a call if you have some thoughts on the matter, 503-325-0010. And I'm going to start it off here with just my own little checklist of indicators or indices of the brokenness of the system. Let's talk about the government shutdown. There's farmers that are hurting. There's people that are disabled, not getting their checks. There's children that require special assistance. They're not getting their help. There's a Food and Drug Administration not having employees to do their job. It's pretty grim. The list goes on. I think there's I just saw a story about possible airport closure in Miami, Florida, and that's a big airport because they don't have enough security employees. And it's all over about $5 billion, and it's about the inability of the Senate, the House, and the president to get along, to have a common vision, to make compromises, to find consensus. And I would further posit that that is the result of two parties, political parties, and the way they have to answer to their base. And their base is really drawn a line in the sand on this one. So while the fact of the matter is that in early December, the Senate and the House agreed upon a $2.5 billion continuing resolution appropriation for the Homeland Security Department, including some money, I guess, putatively for the wall, not much. President Trump did a 180-degree about-face, and now, with that bill having been approved by both houses of Congress, Mitch McConnell, Senate Majority Leader, Republican Senate Majority Leader, Mitch McConnell refuses to send it on to the president. So there's some indications of brokenness. There were 3 million more voters for the loser in the 2016 presidential election than there were for the winner. I think there was the number of people that are represented in Wyoming and the power of their vote is disproportionately large as compared to the state of California. There's the problem of gerrymandering and voter fraud, and I'm not talking about people double voting or who aren't authorized to vote. I'm talking about active efforts like the Secretary of State of Georgia subverting the voters, purging the rolls without proper cause. The list just goes on and on, and it's bad. It's bad out there. The gerrymandering is one that sometimes benefits both parties, but it has gotten worse so that you have legislative districts in Congress that kind of look like the Philippines when they should follow a more contiguous and logical shape. But if you have the power, such as you own the legislature or the governorship, then you can strain that way to get your district drawn that way. That's why politics matters. That's why the gubernatorial elections matter and who controls the state houses. Anyway, I'm just blabbing on here. It's 9:35, and we're waiting for our first call, 503-325-0010. Do you agree that the system is broken? And if so, what is the strongest evidence of that you see? Give us a call. And, you know, if there's some one particular thing that is bothering you, say, about the shutdown, we would love to hear about that from you. And while I wait for that little light to go on, I'll just continue. You know, one thing that bothered me, it didn't seem like it was a good faith effort by the then and previous Congress, House of Representatives, and I think it was the Judiciary Committee, no, the House Intelligence Committee, to really ask the right questions and to share information with the public in a transparent and open process about what was going on. And it looks like we have a call. Hooray. This conversation with John Orr, you're on the air. What's your comment? Okay, hold on here. Oh, there we go. I'm sorry. Oh, you're gone. No, you're there. Conversation with John Orr. Are you there? Okay, we're trying it again.
Are we still there?
Yeah. Thank you for calling the Conversation with John Orr. How are you doing? What's your comment?
First of all, let me state that I'm a socialist, so I'm coming at this with a little different view, but I think that we've allowed too much money into our electoral process, and a simple way to resolve that would be to limit the amount of money that can be spent on a campaign, the length of time, and that it be funded solely through tax dollar. And that's my primary statement. I can go on and on, but...
Let's talk about the one that really appeals to me, I mean, aside from the obvious one, which is the limit to money, we can come back to that one, is the length of time. Doesn't everybody get sick of the length of the perpetual campaign, the presidential campaign, people announcing, you know, this month for, you know, a vote that won't be held for, like, 21 months.
That's correct. And if we take a quick look at that again, I'm sure you'll agree, about the amount of money that's spent for those extended periods. So once again, limiting the time that a campaign can happen will automatically reduce the cost, make it more affordable, and we, once again, the taxpayer, can afford to pay it. And the technique to achieve that would probably be any candidate would have to show some sort of support for running for office, and then a taxpayer picks it up, and a fair amount is spent all across the board, and we have more honest elections.
Do you think that would improve the caliber of candidates that we see running for office and winning elective office in America today?
I think it would bring honest people forward who might previously think, I haven't got a chance, I can't get in this game.
I know the feeling.
I suspect you do. Anyway, I think I've given you enough thought here. You can run with this, right?
Okay. Yeah, I think I will. So we'll let you go. Thank you so much for your call. And I've got, information that hasn't really been well publicized. It's called HR1. It was introduced in the opening hours of the new Congress. HR1 was presented and sponsored by a guy from Maryland, a Democratic representative, and his name is John Sarbanes. And at thecapitalgazette.com, if you Google it, there's a good story about that. And here's what HR1 does. And we all need to get behind it. I realize we live in mostly Democratic state, if you're in Oregon, and also, Democratic senators and congressmen. But, this is something that everybody, everywhere, I would particularly direct this effort to our friends in Kentucky. And we got a caller, so we'll take that. This is a conversation with John Orr. What's your comment or question? Thank you, by the way, for calling. Go ahead.
Good morning, John.
Good morning.
I love HR1. There are lots of facets to it. It's really it would really be a wonderful vehicle for us to extend voting rights across the country, including automatic voter registration. Lots of good things. But your topic was on democracy and how democracy is challenged right now. And I'm very concerned over this, the fact that Trump may want to be declaring a state of emergency for this wall. And if he does that and overrides Congress, I'm very concerned about democracy. And overriding Congress is not what we need or what we voted for or what the Constitution is all about. So I'm afraid we've got some loopholes in our framework that will allow some kind of autocratic ruler to step in like this. So I don't know. Have you been thinking about that state of emergency conversation that he's been talking about?
Yes, at about 5 o'clock this morning. There, the money that Trump proposes to pay for his wall or part of his wall, actually, a $5 billion appropriation would only cover 10% of the wall,
right,
and take many, many years. That's just the part of the wall. But the money was to come from congressionally appropriated funds for relief for communities affected by the wildfire disasters.
Yes.
That's not really cool. That is not
Democratic
cool.
States, too, or Democratic-leaning mm-hmm. states, although Texas was in there, too.
Yeah, it's lamentable and objectionable on a lot of levels. I mean, aside from the fact there are people hurting in communities without much housing, with much less housing now, who are living in, not such great conditions, and the economic hardships befalling them and their families, their school districts, and their children, it's objectionable on that level. But the point you make is that it's violative of the Constitution would cause me to predict that it would, A, end up in court, and B, based on some precedent that may have been set during the Nixon administration, a court would find that a violation of the presidential powers. But that would take a while. But it certainly should be a red flag to anybody who doubts that the proportionality of this president in terms of his concern for the country as a whole versus his concern for his political base really may qualify him as unfit for office.
Exactly. This is like another, Congress was all supporting him in the 2 years that they had full reins of government, of essentially running all three branches of government. They could not pass this wall like it was his most, precious campaign promise, and all of a sudden, now it's the Democrats' fault. So, that's another whole aspect of this.
It is. We don't want to go down that road too much. It's disingenuous and frankly dishonest for him
right.
to do so. But, you know, the thing is, we have, demographically speaking, in this country, approximately 35% to 40% of people who appear to be the ones that Trump was referring to in when he said, "I could shoot somebody on Fifth Avenue
right.
in New York
right.
City, and they would still love me." And, you know, that's perhaps
that's
a topic.
Insane.
Yeah, that's perhaps a topic for a separate program. You know, if you're friends with me on Facebook, I really do try to explore those psychological and political issues behind that loyalty, and indeed the phenomenon where people vote against their economic self-interest, that the more unfair the economic system sees to them, it seems the more they feel identified with the people that are delivering and perpetuating the disadvantages to the middle class and the working classes. But that being said, I really like the details of this H.R. 1 that's proposed. It expands access to the ballot box by implementing automatic voter registration. You might want to turn the radio down.
Yeah.
Automatic voter registration, like we have in Oregon, and mandatory allowance for early voting, and no excuse required for absentee ballots. It would crack down on restrictive voter ID laws, which really was a problem in the southeast United States, in Georgia and Florida. And then it restores the Voting Rights Act. I think that was a premature...
To felons?
Restoring the vote to felons is a separate issue. The Voting Rights Act created an oversight for states which had long histories of discrimination against minority voters, African-American voters. And, you know, another 5-4 decision,
the
Supreme Court says we don't need that. Of course,
you know,
we still need it. That's the reality
right,
of it.
Right.
So H.R. 1, presented by John Sarbanes and Nancy Pelosi and 221 other co-sponsors, 221 co-sponsors.
Yay.
So it's got the strong support of the House of Representatives. I can't imagine why any Republican wouldn't want to support it. But, you know, we run into the problem of the Senate, the Republican
right.
majority of the Senate, and more not to, inflict too much responsibility on the Republicans, on Mitch McConnell in particular.
Right.
And so, but, you know, I just want to recite there while there's time here, it requires an independent commissions to draw up districts to deal with the gerrymandering. I really like that one because, you know, it's not voters choosing electors, the elected. It's the elected choosing the voters, and that's just flat wrong.
Yeah.
It undermines confidence on the part of the voters. And this bill does a lot. It increases federal assistance of state voting systems, including funding for paper ballots. Now, the paper ballot thing seems like such a no-brainer. Anybody who's ever, you know, operated a Windows system, or anybody who's ever had a computer knows that. I mean, I was just trying last week on my laptop, I was just trying to clear out some space to speed up my computer, and then next thing I know, everything is on my screen is gone. Fortunately, I just turned it back on and it reappeared. But everybody knows about the hazards, and everybody should remember the 2000 election. And at least we had some voting chads there. What if hacking? I mean, God, it's like an art form. It's a science. It's something many people spend many hours, including the Russians, to do. So we just have to do that. It's a no-brainer. Anybody opposing it, you know, you just scratch your head and ask why.
I'm still concerned about secretaries of state.
Well, yes.
You know, so, I mean, we had one running in Georgia.
Yeah, and running for office. And they should
I mean,
this bill doesn't address that. But if they had a concern for the appearance of propriety or the reality of impropriety, because that's what it was, then, you know, legislators everywhere need to require recusal of secretaries of state who are running for office.
The one thing that we need to protect is every citizen's vote to vote. And it should be a nonpartisan thing. I ran a voter registration campaign in the port of Iwako last summer, and it tried to keep it nonpartisan as heck. You know, we should all have that right. You know, let's agree to that, that we, you know, that we're all citizens with all different opinions, and we have the right to disagree and protest and vote for the party of your choice. But let's agree to voter rights. You know, it is in our Constitution, and oh, by the way, I need to put in a plug.
Yeah.
I'm taking a course on the Constitution, which just started last Tuesday. It's the next three Tuesdays at Grace Harbor College in El Waco, Tuesday from 1 to 3. It's fantastic with Seth Tishner. I mean, it's every right,
wow.
Every citizen needs to take, you know, a turn at our Constitution. Open the book. It's small. Take your, you know, cup of coffee and a couple of chocolates, and you can work your way through it. It's important that we understand this document because we have to stand together. We are not standing divided. This man is sticking a knife in the heart of our country. He's dividing us. There was a quote by someone who said, you know, most presidents address the nation to bring peace and comfort to the people.
Mm-hmm.
This president addressed the nation to bring fear into the people, to keep dividing us, to keep us in, you know, fear of one another, fear of the other. So we need to stand on that Constitution. So please, everyone, open the book.
Yeah, that's such a good point, because I think civics, critical thinking, history, and the knowledge, specific knowledge of the Constitution, they don't seem to be given the proper weight in our in a lot of our elected representatives. That there are things more important than getting elected. There's the idea of patriotism.
Right.
I mean, nobody's asking anybody to invade Normandy Beach hail of machine gun bullets for a lifestyle. Just all they have to do is do their homework, not just get their information from one particular source, and think about the greater good. And the greater good of actually, finding consensus and finding the things that we share in common belief, to take the further point on, you know, H.R. 1, which is before the Congress. It's a bill that would restore some confidence and eliminate corruption in the voting process. It also establishes, addressing the concern of the previous caller, a matching system for citizens-funded elections. It would revamp the federal election system to effectively place a beat cop and put some enforcement power there. And it would prevent taxpayers from paying taxpayer money for settling discrimination lawsuits, such as the ones that we only found out about recently, where if a congressman is, hounding one of his young interns, then get sued by that intern that we don't know about it, that the taxpayers pay for it. I mean, it's just like outrageous. It's self-evidently outrageous, but we need a law, and somehow that law has failed to be passed by the present Congress, and that's regrettable. A code of conduct for the United States Supreme Court, enhanced enforcement powers to the Office of Government Ethics to avoid the revolving door between federal agencies, particularly cabinet officials, and lobbyists. The lobbyists, I posted something on Facebook today, the lobbyists have so much influence, particularly where candidates need money. They need lots of money. I know as a candidate, I didn't have enough money, and I just couldn't get my voice out there. I couldn't reach enough home. So, hey, if you want to be in the game, you got to pony up. And if you don't have the money, well, I'll tell you what you see. You see people like Cory Booker and Kamala Harris, both senators, both with high aspirations in political office, which is to say the presidency. And they're going to Wall Street just like Hillary Clinton did, because it costs $1 billion. And if you don't have the money to tough it out and have effective staff, effective outreach to cover campaigns in Iowa, New Hampshire, South Carolina, blah, blah, blah. If you don't have the money for that, then you're not in the game. If you can't pay for the advertising, you can't pay for the social media, you can't pay for the polling data, no matter how great your values are or the things that you will do to save America, you're not in the game. You can go back home and, you know, do radio.
And it's still classist races. I mean, we're still running by class again. So we've got an autocracy because we've got the aristocracy, because we've got the rich guys. Only the rich guys can play. So we're now ruled by them or governed by them.
Okay, we have another caller.
Thank you so much, dear.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay. Are you there? Okay, let's try it again. Hello. Are you there? Caller waiting. No. Let's try it. There we go.
Thank you.
Hello. I think we got you this time. This is a conversation with John R. Thank you for calling. Thank you for waiting. What's your comment?
Well, I was in Australia back in September, and of course, being American there, I was peppered with all sorts of political questions, and one of their responses absolutely resonated with me. In Australia, you are required to vote, and if you don't, you get a fine.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. That's I know I've heard about that and others. How about this one, a little less punitive, since we don't want to, jump to that. How about a national holiday for your voting day, so that after you've worked, 8 or 10 hours and you're exhausted and you got kids to pick up and you got to have dinner and your blood sugar's low, you're just whooped and you see a line because there's not enough funding for per ballot boxes, and they haven't adopted Oregon's progressive voting method by mail. They just say to hell with it. I mean, how many people just say to hell with it?
Well, I agree, but I'm thinking if we went the route of Australia where you got to vote or you get fined, I think we're going to have more people showing up, as we should. And another side of the coin that we discussed was the Electoral College, how outdated it is. The candidates all focus, the national level candidates all focus on those big ticket states.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and now it sounds like you've looked at that issue. How many electors are there from Oregon?
That I cannot tell. Yeah. I am not that savvy, but I just think that system is broken, and I keep saying we need to look at Australia's model. Everybody's got to vote.
Yeah, I the one example that sticks in my mind, though I don't remember the particulars of it, is that Wyoming has one of the lowest populations, if not the lowest, in the entire country. And California has indisputably the largest.
Right.
But the amount of political influence in the United States Congress between your representative in Wyoming and a representative in California is skewed. Or maybe that's the Electoral College. If anybody has the skinny on that, I certainly invite them to call in the remaining couple of minutes to this broadcast. So, so caller, what do you think about HR1? Had you heard of it?
I have heard a little bit about it. Can you refresh my memory, please?
Oh, well, it's a reform of it casts a lot of nets out there on issues ranging from implementing automatic voter registration, allowing early voting, crackdown restrictive voter ID laws. Restores the Voting Rights Act, funds elections with matching grants, and on and on. All these things which are just complete no-brainers to me. You know, I know I'm a progressive, but, I don't think it's a Democratic-Republican thing, because the tables could easily be turned, in a couple of years or in a generation. It's about getting fair representation and a voice to people who, quite frankly, seem pissed off and disenfranchised and alienated from a political and economic system that no longer has their interests at heart and is just working to benefit the few at the expense of the many.
I agree, and I think this ties in with the Australian model, if you think about it.
Well, now, just because people vote doesn't necessarily mean they're going to make wise choices.
No, it doesn't. But if you don't show up, you can't let your voice be heard, whether it be an informed voice or not. If you don't show up.
Well, let me ask you this: have you ever faced a ballot measure or a candidate campaign where you just couldn't make up your mind?
I call that picking the lesser of two evils, which is what we frequently get handed when it comes to the presidential elections.
Mm-hmm.
So how about on a ballot measure where, well, you know, that seems like a good idea, but they're saying that, and I'm not sure. And because my concern with that is if I vote and I don't make the right choice because I'm not sufficiently informed, I may have my responsibility on a bad outcome.
I agree with that as well, because what I hear often enough is that there are little riders, little pet projects attached to bills, and say, yeah, I like the idea of the bill, but, oh, what's this hidden little thing that's going to get passed with it?
Yeah, I hear that. Well, let's see here. I think that's probably going to do it for our show. I'd like to thank the present caller and all those who called beforehand for what I hope was a useful and beneficial broadcast on a certainly as relevant a topic as can be thought of. That's democracy. Is it broken? And what are the solutions? And to me, everybody in America, particularly in states like Kentucky, where Mitch McConnell comes from, need to get behind HR1, and they need to do so vocally. So, again, I really appreciate the callers coming in and calling in, rather. they didn't actually come in. And sharing their thoughts, their observations. We're all better off when we participated by sharing our ideas in the public square. So, yeah, really do appreciate it. We'll be back next week on Conversation with John Orr at 9:30 p.m. Coming up at 10:01, the news. And this is KMUN 91.9 FM, KTCB, Tillamook 89.5 FM. Streaming live at coastradio.org. And if you missed today's broadcast of A Conversation with John Orr, it's available at coastradio.org in the form of a podcast. Just go to the website and look for podcasts and listen, and you'll be there.